Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Well, hello and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English. Now, I was watching Skyfall the other night, and I'm probably like one of the last people on the planet to see this movie, and it was just so highly recommended. It was really great. And, you know, I realized I really love spy thrillers. And, you know, something else that I love that seems to have nothing to do with spies is John Steinbeck. I mean, that just seems like they're totally polar opposites. You know, and you might remember John Steinbeck. He wrote a book or two you may recognize, The Grapes of Wrath or Mice and Men. Or maybe you recognize his Oprah Book Club series contribution called East of Eden. Yeah, that's right. Those aren't just movies. They started out in life as books, and they're written by literary legend John Steinbeck. So what does 007 and John Steinbeck have to do with each other? Well, Mr. Steinbeck may not have been in Her Majesty's service, but someone suspects he may have been a citizen spy. And that someone is here with us tonight talking about his book, Steinbeck, Citizen Spy, The Untold Story of John Steinbeck and the CIA. Please welcome Brian Kennard. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Sheila, for having me on, especially today, the release day of the book. That was a grand bit of coincidence you could have me on today.
Oh, I'm excited. I feel like I'm like top of the news, you know. And, of course, you know, we were talking a little bit before we started. I could easily have done a whole hour on this. This is so immensely interesting. And I'm just so intrigued. You know, and then I look at the book cover, and what do I find? A quote from Steinbeck's son. And I'm not going to share the quote because I really want people to go check out the cover for themselves so that they can have that same experience that I just had when I first saw it. I want them to actually have that moment, you know, reading that. And I have a million questions for you, but you know, let's start off with where people can find the book. Let's tell them that first.
Okay. Well, we've got listings up, and right before showtime, I checked all the usual suspects. We've got ebooks up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, which is kind of a meta ebook engine. We're in print on Amazon and on CreateSpace. I don't believe the Barnes & Noble listing is up just yet, but that should be up fairly soon, and other companies will be coming out in dribs and drabs. So if you go to Amazon, you can find it, or go to GrapeDistractions.com or SteinbeckCitizenSpy.com, and we've got links there.
Fantastic. Now, before we go too far, I just want to let our listeners know that I do have the live chat session that it's open, and you're welcome to come and comment or ask questions there. Or if you'd like to call in, it's 646-200-4071, and I do have a toll-free number, 877-497-5906. And after the live show, you know, we post this podcast up on readersentertainment.com. So for those of you, and I know there are a lot of you who listen to this to the podcast on iTunes, you know, you're going to have questions. You're going to have comments. Come on over. If you leave a question or comment, I'll be sure to let Brian know so that he can come over and answer that or respond to that. Now, Brian, we've had you on the show before. It was a really fun show. You know, we talked about your book, Skullduggery, 45 True Tales of Disturbing the Dead. And, you know, to this day, that interview sticks out for me. It was such a fun show. When I saw that you're writing about Steinbeck, I couldn't wait to hear the story behind that. So, you know, tell us, how did the book come into being?
Well, a number of years ago, through a series of random events, I became reinvigorated and reintroduced with Steinbeck. You know, I knew about as much about John as everyone that's graduated from high school and college does. But I started looking into his life, and he had a research assistant named Chase Horton who helped him with his rewrite of Thomas Mowry's L'Amour d'Arthur. And none of the biographers really did Horton any justice, and I became convinced that there was a story in Chase Horton. Along the way, I find out things like Steinbeck worked with the OSS during World War II in the intelligence community and doing propaganda for the War Information Office. He has a number of redactions in his FBI file from the CIA. And a number of things like that started to click for me, and the story became, could John Steinbeck actually have worked for the CIA? And here we have the result of all that hard work and the answer to that question, I hope.
Now, how in the world did you come across all this information? Like, is this something that, you found out just in this one way and you got all that information? Did you have to go do some research? How'd that work?
Good Lord. Did a ton of research going to places like Stanford University's archives. They have Steinbeck's original letters. New York Public Library has Chase Wharton's journal, which has some intriguing connections to people that were a publisher in New York named Frederick Prager, who is all but linked with the CIA by E. Howard Hunt, the infamous Watergate burglar. But mainly, I have two letters that I obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. I sent a request to the CIA asking them on any information they had on John Steinbeck. And I did this in January of last year, and in August of 2012, I received two letters back. One is in John Steinbeck's own hand to Walter Beadle Smith, who was the head of the CIA at that time, asking Beadle Smith if he could be of any service to the CIA during an upcoming trip to Europe. It says it in black and white. More shocking than that was Beadle Smith's reply, which basically said, yes, you can be of great assistance to us. Why don't you come down to Washington and speak with us about it? These letters are in the book, along with the Freedom of Information Act request letter that I got from the CIA, verifying where it came from. And that coupled with instances in John's FBI file, his service in World War II with various government agencies. Steinbeck even suggested to Franklin Delano Roosevelt early, actually before we got into World War II, that we flood the German economy with fake Deutschmarks to collapse their economy and possibly even stop World War II from happening. That was turned down by the administration, but I've got documents from CIA manuals that reinvigorate that idea in the 1950s. Just tons of little coincidences within his life, brushes with people that are either very close to the agency or a degree of separation away from them. So that's the short, long answer of that.
Now, you talk about how Steinbeck was a controversial author, but note that he was never called before the House Select Committee on Un-American Activities. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Of course, starting in 1947, in October 1947, that committee was charged with ferreting out communists, especially within the motion picture industry and within the literary community. Literally, 2 weeks after Steinbeck comes back from Russia, he did a tour with photographer Robert Capa that formed the basis for his book, A Russian Journal, which consequently he met Walter Beadle Smith when he was the ambassador to Russia during that trip in 1947. And we have a few years later of him writing to him when he's head of the CIA, which is one of those coincidences that is probably not a coincidence that I talk about in the book. But we have in October of 1947, the Hollywood 10 being called before the House Committee for alleged communist ties. Steinbeck was denied a commission in the United States Army during World War II, and even an enlistment during World War II, for his liberal views in the Grapes of Wrath and his alleged communist ties. I mean, this was a huge flap back then. I mean, people were burning copies of Grapes of Wrath when it came out in the late 30s. And there's some documentation in his FBI file that basically say he's an undesirable character in 1943. So we flash forward four or five years ahead, and magically, Steinbeck, who's just gotten back from Russia, the heart of communism, is never called before the committee. Throughout the 50s, he's never called. As a matter of fact, Steinbeck was the first person to try to give one of the Hollywood Ten a writing job in 1948 before they were actually convicted of contempt of Congress. That's in his FBI file. But he was good friends with Elia Kazan, who, of course, famously was called before the committee and denied them any access to any of his memories of persons that were in the Communist Party. And then later is called back, and they threatened him a little bit. And, of course, Kazan gives up Clifford Odets and a few other people during that session. Well, John's in Europe then. That was in 1952. And he writes his editor, Pat Covici, about Elia Kazan's situation, and he's kind of lamenting that his friends got railroaded. And he says in this letter, and it's in Steinbeck, A Life and Letters, if I remember correctly, which was published a number of years ago and contains hundreds and hundreds of Steinbeck's letters. But he tells Covici, you know, who knows exactly what you would do in a situation like that, but verbatim, he says, "I guess I will never know." And in 1952, at the height of the Red Scare and McCarthyism, how in the world could John Steinbeck know, with his background or his perceived background, that he would never be called before HUAC? Well, if John's working with the CIA as an asset in Europe, where he's writing this letter from, he could probably be pretty well assured that he would never be called before HUAC. He's mentioned a number of times during the trial transcripts by other people, too. And I list five or six definite ties that he has by people that were accused of being communists and mentioned in their testimony about Steinbeck's works being read by communists, but they never call him. Roy Schein, and this was in 53 or 54, went on a tour throughout Europe, and all the State Department libraries removed books by Steinbeck, Dashiell Hammett, and other blacklisted authors, although Steinbeck was never blacklisted. But yet they come back to the States, and they never call Steinbeck before HUAC. A little convenient. So, once again, another one of those things that we will probably never get confirmation from the CIA, but I think with the other evidence I have, it's pretty obvious what was going on.
Now, tell us about Operation Mockingbird.
Operation Mockingbird was outed originally starting in 1967 by Ramparts magazine, and got its broadest coverage from Carl Bernstein in a 1977 Rolling Stone article. And it was a CIA operation that utilized journalists as assets for the CIA. It sounds like something out of a Robert Ludnam novel, but it's not. Basically, what they would do is journalists, one, are very inquisitive, and two, travel to odd places. And members of the CIA would recruit journalists the vast majority of time to maybe just listen while they were in a foreign country. You're going to Yugoslavia next week. Tell us if you see any of these type of train cars while you're there. Some of the assignments were a little more spy-like and fell into, can you give this package or this letter to this person or meet this person here on a certain day. All the way to possibly even planning propaganda and leaking news stories at correct times, or at the correct times as far as the CIA was concerned, to the news media. And let's take, for example, if journalists were still involved with this, which they are, the CIA calls up someone a few years back and says, I want you to run a story that says we're closing in on Osama bin Laden's Pakistan hideout. Which all very well may be true, but the story might have been planted simply to move bin Laden from his hiding place to somewhere else so they could flush him out if they didn't know the exact location. That's the type of thing that those journalists that were involved in Mockingbird were a part of. Now, the documentation that I have from the CIA goes on to say, we can either confirm or deny any other or any links between the agency and your subject in that famous CIA that will speak. So we're not exactly sure the full capacity that Steinbeck was involved with the agency. But with actions in his FBI file are up to 1966 or 67 by the CIA. So we can probably safely say that John was involved in some type of activity, more than likely with Mockingbird. And a number of his articles are blatant propaganda. There was an article that he wrote for Collier's Magazine about a little French village named Poligny that he visited during this 1952 trip. And he actually calls the people peasants that live there. And at that time, France had a very unstable government and was thinking about getting out of NATO. So this is kind of a propaganda piece that shows how the French people still need the guidance of their good American neighbors. And it's almost written, you know, in the style of if John Steinbeck had written The Grapes of Wrath from the point of view of the Joes deserving what they got because they didn't keep up with their loan payments. It's the most un-Steinbeck thing that Steinbeck ever wrote. Little things like that make you wonder if that was actually done at the behest of the agency or not.
Now, you know, I think something that really intrigued me is that you got Thomas Steinbeck to do an introduction and give a quote. And I, of course, am dying of curiosity as to how you managed that.
Well, I had talked to Thomas in November of 2008, back when I was on the Chase Orton trail. And I dropped him an email. It's amazing what you can get when you just ask. And he spoke with me then for about an hour, and we talked about Sir Thomas Malory and the Holy Grail and John's love for medieval things and his love of history and all sorts of other little things. And in the intervening years, of course, I'm finding all this out about Steinbeck. And I thought, I've got to talk to Tom about this. But how do you do that? How do you call up somebody and say, I think your dad was a spy?
Right.
Well, what do you do? So I decided that the best way to go about that was I would write a working manuscript first, then get in contact with him. Because, you know, what better way to flesh out your arguments to make sure all your research is spot on than by putting pen to paper? So in February of this year, I was confident enough in the work that I'd done that I emailed him, and I got a hold of his wife, Gail, who was also his gatekeeper, and explained the story to her. And initially, I emailed them that I had some documents that I obtained through the Freedom of Information Act that have not been made known to the public. I didn't want to say anything about spies or the CIA and, you know, make them think that I was a true nutter. And I spoke with Gail for about 45 minutes, an initial call, and she was fascinated by the story and said, well, you've got to talk to Tom. And she says, but why didn't you just go ahead and publish this without talking to us. And I said, well, you can't do that. You can't. I couldn't just publish a book without letting a man's son know this about his life. And very likely Thomas didn't know that his dad had any involvement with the CIA. So I spoke with Thomas a few days later and explained my position to him. And his reply was, well, I always knew my dad was up to something.
No, wow.
We started talking from, I know, but to this day, and this is the unfortunate thing, you know, Thomas is very, very intrigued by the story, you know, and, you know, he looked at the letters and he's looked at my manuscripts and he said, you know, this is Dad's handwriting, you know, and there's no denying that this was John and that this is something he would have done. But without further documentation, it's hard for me even to definitively say that John was a spy. I believe it, yes. I think all my circumstantial and hard evidence that I have leads to that end. Thomas can't confirm or deny it either because he has that same lack of evidence that is probably sitting in the basement of Langley, Virginia right now. And we'll probably never, ever, ever see the light of day. Maybe it will now that this book has come out. But Thomas would call me up every couple of weeks just to chat. And he'd tell me about his memoirs he was writing. And, you know, he'd read a little of the manuscript and we'd talk about it or just chat. And Thomas just offered to do a little piece for the book and to let me use a quote for the front cover. So that's how I pulled that off. I really didn't pull it off. It just kind of happened through the good graces of Tom Sybeck, and I appreciate all the time he spent with me on this. And at times he'd come up with anecdotes that I added into the book that I didn't – there's no way anyone would ever have known about them other than Tom's direct knowledge.
Yeah, you know, I'm real curious. What do you think Steinbeck fans will make of this?
That's the million-dollar question. I think it's going to be about split down the middle. I think there's going to be people that say, Kennard, you're a nutter, or this is an insane idea. There's no way that Steinbeck the liberal worked for the CIA. There's going to be other people that embrace it, and then there are going to be people that you know, think I faked documents or made all this up, and that, of course, is nowhere near the truth. But there are academians out there that have studied Steinbeck their entire lives, and they've missed this. And there's probably going to be a bunch of hurt feelings out there with folks that have written doctoral dissertations and other books on Steinbeck that never saw this coming. And I was shocked when I got the letters, as they will probably be when they find out about it. So I hope it only enhances the story of an already complex man. And that's really what my intent is. I mean, not only was one of our greatest authors, he was one of our greatest heroes, too, for working covertly with the agency. So I hope that's what the big takeaway from this is.
I know the book's just come out, but, you know, I was just curious as to if you had any kind of feedback at all. Did you have any advanced copies go out? Have you had anybody from any universities look at this? Do you have any feedback at all yet?
Well, other than personal feedback, no. I made the decision that I was not going to send out advanced copies of this. I held on to the secret for a year while I was getting this ready for publication. And just getting it out there might mean I might lose the story. And I was afraid that, once again, since we're talking about academia, getting it into their hands might be more detrimental to me in an advanced manner than letting it come out with everyone else finding out about it.
Right.
So I don't know if that's the best decision. It's the decision we've made, and it's the decision that we've stuck with. So everybody in the world's found out today. And the Scotsman is going to be doing an article on this, hopefully sometime next week. Pardon me. And we've got press releases out the wazoo out there. So we'll see if that generates any interest. And, you know, I'm sure some of these people at, you know, the New York Times or the LA Times have looked at this and thought, John Steinbeck and the CIA, let's put that in the tinfoil hat category. You know, so it might be a slow burn, but I think... Go ahead.
You know, it'll be interesting because you do have those letters, and then you did get his son to look at that and confirm that that's his own handwriting. You know, you and I were talking before the show started about if somebody had told me Ian Fleming had done some spying, and you know, you talked about Operation Mockingbird. To me, I can totally see that someone in his position would have an advantage and be an advantage to gather some kind of intelligence, even if it is just like you said. Oh, tell us if you see this kind of you know, railroad car or whatever to delivering something. You know, I don't know how involved, you know, he was, but it's not like this is unheard of.
Right? No, it's not. No, and one of the people that I interviewed for the book was a former intelligence officer, and I refer to him as TC in the book because, unfortunately, it is federal crime to out an intelligence officer, so I am not about to mention what his name is. But he's definitely somebody that's very real and somebody that is, it's easy to confirm who he is, if that makes sense. But we talk quite a bit, and he never told me anything about specific operations, people involved, other than, like, you know, the E. Howard Hunts or William Colbys or the people that the public knows were involved with the CIA. But he ran a number of journalists during his tenure with the agency, which ran from the Eisenhower administration to the Reagan administration. And he talked about walk-ins. And a walk-in was simply somebody in the early days of the agency that would say, hey, I'm an aerospace engineer. I'm going to a conference in Copenhagen next week. What does the agency need me to do? And remember, we're talking about professionals in the early 1950s that were part of the greatest generation. These were people that had been in World War II, that had specialized skill sets that would be very valuable to any intelligence organization, especially the CIA, which began in 1947. They were underfunded. They really didn't have the manpower, the expertise to pull off the mission that was in front of them to keep tabs on the entire world. So they used whatever resources they could, whether it be journalists or people like our mythical aerospace engineer. And like I said, they'd sit down and ask them if they hear anything to tell them, or some of those other mundane tasks. Now, as far as Steinbeck goes, I personally believe that his story with the intelligence community, well, this is documented, but starts in World War II. And I go through that in the book. But in 1947, Steinbeck goes to Russia to do a series of articles for the New York Herald Tribune about the common people in Russia. And Steinbeck and Robert Capa were some of the first people to actually have more or less a free reign within the Soviet Union from the West. I mean, this is the very, very beginnings of the Cold War. And they meet Walter Beadle Smith there, who in 1952 Steinbeck would write this letter to. And if you read a Russian journal with a different eye, an eye towards intelligence, it's a gold mine for any intelligence officer. He talks about going to the Stalingrad tractor factory, and he even laments in the book that he can't get better information on production figures than what he's presenting. What does that matter to mom and pop in the Midwest? He talks about going to an air show in Moscow, and he says, me and Kappa didn't know an airplane from a hole in the ground, or our asses from an airplane, or something to that effect. Well, that's a huge lie. Steinbeck took flying lessons. He wrote a book called Bombs Away during World War II, where for about 3 months, he rode in every aircraft the Army Air Corps had in 1943. So it's a bold-faced lie. And he talks about the condition of the Soviet planes that he was on, the conversion rates for rubles on the black market. And my CIA friend confirmed that a Russian journal was kind of like recommended reading for intelligence officers back then. So if Steinbeck wasn't gathering intelligence in 1947, they sure as heck made use of it afterwards.
Well, that music that just blared up let us know that we are at the end of the program. And I'm telling you, I knew I could do a whole hour. I if I had only known, but you are keeping this under wraps, I could have changed it and had a special. But, you know, I'm really interested in how this develops. And, you know, you and I stay in contact on Facebook. Could you just let people know where else they can find out more about you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have a Facebook fan page. I'm the owner of Grave Distractions Publications. You can get in contact with me through Grave Distractions, and that website is www.gravedistractions.com. And we have a great lineup of authors. You can also go to SteinbeckCitizenSpy.com, and that has an excerpt from the book where you can get it. Freedom of Information Act resources, espionage resources, Steinbeck resources, and a method to get in contact with me there. Or just friendly on Facebook, or I'm on Twitter, right? You know, all the normal places.
Right.
And I'd be happy to answer a question or do what I can for you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on. Like I said, I've been waiting for a year to tell somebody about this, and I'm glad you had first crack at it.
Me too. I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, you can go, and if you didn't get a chance to come join us live, you can go ahead and put your comments and your questions up. The blog will be up tomorrow on readersentertainment.com. Stop by, and if you leave any comments or questions, I'll make sure Brian gets those, and we'll get those addressed. I'm Sheila English, your host, and happy reading, everybody.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe, and welcome to our circle.